Hi, Dave Emery here, side one of For the Record program number 778, the OUND file, part two. This is being recorded on March 2nd of the year 2014. In this program, we are going to continue to flesh out the historical background and political nature of the OUND. That is the parent organization and the direct, organic, so to speak, influence on the militant forces in the Ukrainian opposition. Those militant forces, chiefly Svoboda, S-W-O-B-O-D-A or S-V-O-B-O-D-A, depending on the article, and the Pravi Sector or Right Sector, that's P-R-A-V-Y-S-E-K-T-O-R, as well as a whole lot of other organizations, are the direct descendants of the OUND, a Ukrainian fascist organization that was an ally and a tool of the Third Reich, as we looked at in, for the record, 777 and in other programs as well. After the formal cessation of hostilities in Europe after World War II, the OUND, which had formed itself like a number of other Third Reich allies into guerrilla groups, continued to wage guerrilla war in the Ukraine, and as well as other groups waging guerrilla war in parts of the former Soviet Union until the early 1950s. As we looked at in 777, the guerrilla warfare really constituted a continuation of the combat of World War II, only the combatants basically, in effect, switched uniforms from the Third Reich to the Office of Policy Coordination under Frank Wisner, which was a subsidiary organization of the CIA. That material was taken from AFA program number one, recorded 30 years ago in the spring of 2014. Then inside two of 777, we took a look at the assassination of Stefan Bandera, the head of the OUND. The OUND, by the way, was helped to staff SS and Gestapo units, as well as the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall or Nightingale. The Einsatzgruppen were the Nazi mobile killing squads that performed much of the dirty work, so to speak, on the Eastern Front in World War II. Stefan Bandera was murdered on October 15th of 1959, the same day that Lee Harvey Oswald traveled to Switzerland, from where he went to the former Soviet Union, allegedly defecting. In fact, Oswald was a U.S. intelligence officer after he came back from the former Soviet Union. He was infiltrated into a number of leftist organizations and then framed for Kennedy's killing and murdered before he had a chance to defend himself. The actual killing of Stefan Bandera, which again occurred the day that Lee Harvey Oswald, quote, defected, unquote, appears to have been performed by underground Reich elements, either BND and or perhaps some element of CIA or other underground Reich-associated elements. Bogdan Stashinsky, the alleged assassin, still had a broken key, the other half of which was still in the lock of Stefan Bandera's apartment 2 years later. And there are a number of other very fishy aspects to that official version. However, we noted in, for the record, or AFA rather, program number 15, excerpted into side two of FTR 777, that elements associated with the underground Reich, the BND, the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, elements of CIA and others, went out of their way, elements basically that were to coalesce into the what was known as the World Anti-Communist League. They went out of their way to link the assassination of Stefan Bandera, allegedly by the KGB, to the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And Lee Harvey Oswald was made out to have been a trainee of the very same program that trained Bogdan Stashinsky, the assassin or apparent assassin of Stefan Bandera. What we're going to do right now is to listen to an excerpt of For the Record program number 158. This was recorded in June of 1999, and we're going to hear about Senator Thomas Dodd, part of the U.S. prosecutorial staff at Nuremberg, who was the fellow who took the information, the disinformation, I should say, about Oswald supposedly having been trained by the KGB and linked with the assassination of Stefan Bandera. He had it inserted with the help of the CIA into a Senate Foreign Relations Committee report under the head of that at that time, a guy named Julian Sauerwein. So here this is from For the Record program number 158.
Thomas Dodd's name also crops up in connection with the Kennedy assassination in another context. In addition to the possibility that Lee Harvey Oswald may have been working for Senator Thomas Dodd's committee, it was Senator Thomas Dodd who helped to provide Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee with the disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Soviet or KGB-trained assassin and someone who was linked to the same assassination program that allegedly took the life of Stefan Bandera. Stefan Bandera was a Ukrainian fascist, the head of the OUNB organization that collaborated with the Third Reich. The OUNB not only provided the Third Reich with personnel for various Waffen-SS divisions and collaborated enthusiastically with the Nazis, the OUNB of Stefan Bandera also became a key element of the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. That was a reworking of Hitler's Committee of Subjugated Nations, a consortium of Central and Eastern European fascist groups allied with the Third Reich. It basically renamed itself after World War II and became a key element of what came to be known as the World Anti-Communist League. Stefan Bandera was killed on October 15, 1959. In fact, his assassination appears to have been orchestrated by the Galen spy outfit. However, that organization, by the way, there's discussion of the Bandera assassination in RFA 37 and also in RFA Program 15, both available from Spitfire. In fact, it appears probable that the assassination of Stefan Bandera was actually arranged by the Galen spy organization, which helped to point the finger of guilt in the direction of the KGB. Specifically, a fellow named Bogdan Stashinsky showed up and claimed that he was a KGB assassin and that it was he who killed Stefan Bandera. Elements associated with what was to formally coalesce as the World Anti-Communist League linked the killing of Stefan Bandera with the assassination of President Kennedy. And in fact, the Senate Internal Subcommittee report by Julian Sauerwein tended to link those two events, namely the killing of Bandera and the killing of Kennedy, intimating that Oswald was part of the same KGB assassination team as Bogdan Stashinsky. The fact that Bogdan Stashinsky had a key, half of a key, to Bandera's apartment, the other half of which was still in the door several years later, it's one of a number of different aspects of the Kennedy, of the assassination of Bandera, which casts severe doubt on the KGB did it hypothesis. It should be noted, too, that the day that Bandera was assassinated was the same day that Lee Harvey Oswald defected to the Soviet Union. In fact, Oswald was almost certainly working for U.S. intelligence, and it was not, in fact, the doctrinaire communist that he made himself out to be. Whatever the reality, though, of the assassination of Stefan Bandera, his killing, allegedly by Bogdan Stashinsky, was linked by the American far right, including elements associated with the World Anti-Communist League, with Lee Harvey Oswald's alleged assassination of President Kennedy. And in turn, these attempts at linking the assassination of Kennedy to the communists became known as a Phase One cover-up. In Peter Dale Scott's discussion, many liberals and people of more enlightened political persuasion, in fact, covered up the Kennedy assassination because they were afraid that if, in fact, The public perceived that the Soviets and or Cubans were behind the assassination, that this could lead to a third world war. So the links, the attempts at linking Kennedy's assassination to the communists were an essential element of the cover-up. It was that linking that led many liberals to help cover up the assassination as well, even though they knew that it was not the communists. They were afraid that if, in fact, that became the public perception, and there were elements working very hard to try to achieve that, that that could lead to a Third World War. It should be noted that the report linking Stefan Bandera's killing to Kennedy's killing received furtherance in considerable measure from Senator Thomas Dodd. This is discussed in Deep Politics and the Death of JFK as follows. Speaking of attempts to link the Kennedy assassination to the communists, finally, the chief press contact of the Shikshini Knights, Guy Richards of the New York Journal American, published the claim, soon taken up by Frank Capel, by the John Birch Society, and by Charles Willoughby's American Security Council, remember that last institution, that Oswald, like another alleged KGB assassin, Bogdan Stashinsky, had been trained at a KGB assassination school in Minsk. A toned-down version of the story was subsequently published by Julian Sauerwein's Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, with help supplied via Senator Thomas Dodd from within the CIA. So note that not only did Thomas Dodd help to get the Bogdan Stashinsky canard into print, courtesy of the Julian Sauerwein Senate Internal Security Subcommittee, but that he was assisted in doing so by the Central Intelligence Agency.
That again from For the Record 158 from June of 1999. The text again from Deep Politics and the Death of JFK by Peter Dale Scott. In that same program, we also noted that there is evidence suggesting that part of the framing of Lee Harvey Oswald was also accomplished through his possible work for the Dodd Senate subcommittee that was investigating mail order firearms. In Texas, at that point in time, you could buy a firearm over the counter without producing any identification. Ordering firearms by mail, which required ID, was not something that someone planning an assassination would do. We noted that both Seaport Traders and Klein's Sporting Goods were under investigation by the Dodd subcommittee at that precise point in time, and that is where Lee Harvey Oswald, allegedly using the alias of A.J. Hiddell, ordered that those are the two outlets from which he ordered his weapons. And again, he could have picked up firearms from over-the-counter in Texas with no ID whatsoever. That is more than a little suspicious. We also noted that Thomas Dodd was associated with the American Security Council. That was a subsidiary group of the World Anti-Communist League and heavily overlapped the International Committee for the Defense of Christian Culture, both organizations strongly connected to residual Third Reich elements, the American far right, and elements that also had links to the OUNB. In the summer of 1964, Thomas Dodd traveled to Germany and was networking with people who had reported directly to Martin Bormann, Werwirtschaft Führers, who had reported directly to Martin Bormann during World War II. We have noted in For the Record 327, among others, that on the morning of November 22, 1963, the stock market was collapsed through the gambit using the Tino De Angelis scam and the Bunge Corporation. It's a long story. We don't have time to go into it here. But the evidence suggests that the remarkable and deadly Bormann Capital Network, about which I've spoken so often, was the culprit in the collapsing of the stock market on the morning of November 22, 1963. And in the summer of 64, as the Warren Report was being finalized, Senator Thomas Dodd traveled to Germany and networked with, among others, Ludger Westrick, W-E-S-T-R-I-C-K, a Werwirtschaft Führer, or business leader, who had reported directly to Martin Bormann during World War II, probably did the same thing in the post-war period. The OUNB, with its many SS and Gestapo links, went on to become part of the Republican Ethnic Outreach Organization, literally a Nazi wing of the Republican Party that was an outgrowth of the Crusade for Freedom. That was an illegal domestic intelligence operation that was put together by Richard Nixon. It was really conceived by Alan Dulles. It was executed by his protege, Richard Nixon. The chief spokesperson for that was Ronald Reagan, the guy who handled the State Department machinations to bring these Nazis into the U.S. It was illegal. It was William Casey, who was Ronald Reagan's campaign manager in 1980 and went on to become Reagan's director of the CIA. That Nazi group was made a permanent branch of the Republican Party in the early 70s when George Herbert Walker Bush was chairman of the Republican National Committee and Richard Nixon was president. We're going to take a look now in an excerpt from AFA 37 from September 6th of 1992. We're going to excerpt an article by Russ Belant, B-E-L-L-A-N-T, called The Republican Party and Fascists, The Old Nazis and the New Reich. This is from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 33. And again, this is from AFA 37 from September 6th of 1992. Note the presence of the OUNB in this Nazi element of the Republican Party. Also note that the organizations, the Eastern European Fascist organizations that were to coalesce in the Republican Party, including the OUNB, had been contactee elements of the SS prior to World War II, and then were coordinated with and toward the end of the war under the, in many cases even before that, under the direct control of the SS. So this next segment, again, from AFA 37, from September 6th of 1992, excerpting the article The Republican Party and Fascists, The Old Nazis and the New Right by Russ Belant from Covert Action Information Bulletin number 33.
We begin by taking a look at, Russ Belant's article. It is May 17th, 1985. Ronald Reagan has been back in the nation's capital less than 2 weeks after his much-criticized trip to the Bitburg Cemetery in West Germany. Now, floodlights and television cameras that are part of a president's entourage are waiting at the Shoreham Hotel as our 400 luncheon guests. Ronald Reagan had recently characterized the Nazi Waffen-SS as, quote, victims, unquote, and these comments held special meaning for some of his afternoon luncheon guests. Although it was a Republican Party affair, it was not the usual GOP set, but a special ethnic outreach unit, the National Republican Heritage Groups and Nationalities Council, RHGC. The RHGC is an umbrella for various ethnic Republican clubs and operates under the auspices of the Republican National Committee. It has a special type of outreach and appears to have consciously recruited some of its members and some of its leaders from an Eastern European emigre network which includes anti-Semites, racists, authoritarians, and fascists, including sympathizers and collaborators of Hitler's Third Reich, former Nazis, and even possible war criminals. The persons in this network are a part of the radical right faction of the ethnic communities they claim to represent. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Interrupting, bear in mind that one of the major strategic concepts of the Third Reich for conquest was anti-communism. They learned to use anti-communism or fear of communism as a vehicle for conquest. The last sentence again. These anti-democratic and racialist components of the RHGC use anti-communist sentiments as a cover for their views while they operate as a de facto emigre fascist network within the Republican Party. Of course, the strategic use of anti-communism and fear of communism is the major element in the strategy that the Galen Organization employed in order to exert its effect on American society.
utilizing, again, powerful domestic, American, political, economic, and national security elements with whose views the Galen assessments jibed, they were able to use anti-communism and the fear of communism to have the profound effects on the United States that they had. This is a realization of a major tactic of conquest by the Third Reich. Continuing. Some of the unsavory personalities who were present in that 1985 luncheon audience would later join the 1988 election campaign of President George Bush. This fascist network within the Republican Party represents a small but significant element of the coalition which brought Ronald Reagan into the White House. It is from this network that the George Bush presidential campaign assembled its ethnic outreach unit in 1988, a unit that saw 8 resignations by persons charged with anti-Semitism, racism, and even Nazi collaboration. This network organizes support for its ideological agenda through national and international coalitions of like-minded constituencies which often work with other pro-fascist groups. This broader coalition ranges from Axis allies and their apologists to friends and allies of contemporary dictatorships and authoritarian regimes. In the case of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, the nature of this network can be illustrated by briefly reviewing the backgrounds of some of the past and current leadership. First name is very important. Laszlo Pastor, Laszlo Pastor. The founding chair and a key figure in the council, Pastor began his political career in a Hungarian pro-Nazi party and served in Berlin at the end of World War II. He continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Again, begins his political career in the Hungarian Arrow Cross organization, serves in Berlin at the end of World War II, and again quoting Ballant, he continues to be involved in ultra-rightist groups and fascist networks while working with the GOP. Radi Slavov, R-A-D-I, capital S-L-A-V-O-F-F. The RHGC's executive director is a member of a Bulgarian fascist group and leader of the Bulgarian GOP unit of the council. He was able to get the leader of his Bulgarian nationalist group an invitation to the White House, even though the leader was being investigated for concealing alleged World War II war crimes. He is also active in other emigre fascist groups. Nicholas Nazarenko, N-I-C-O-L-A-S, N-A-Z-A-R-E-N-K-O, a former World War II officer in the German SS Cossack Division, Nazarenko heads the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council and has declared that Jews are his, quote, ideological enemy, unquote. He is still active with pro-Nazi elements in the U.S. Florian Galdau, G-A-L-D-A-U. He is a close associate and defender of Valerian Trifa, that's V-A-L-E-R-I-A-N-T-R-I-F-A, the Romanian archbishop prosecuted for concealing his involvement in war crimes of the pro-Nazi Romanian Iron Guard. Charged by former Iron Guardists and others with being the East Coast recruiter for the Iron Guard in the U.S., Galdau heads the Romanian Republican unit of the RHGC. Philip A. Guarino, G-U-A-R-I-N-O. He is an honorary American member of the conspiratorial P2 Masonic Lodge of Italy, which plotted in the early 1970s to overthrow the Italian government in order to install a dictatorship. Guarino, an Italian Heritage Council member and Republican National Committee advisor, offered aid to those P2 members being investigated. Recall, obviously, we've seen how Nicholas Nazarenko was a member of a World War II Waffen-SS division, Philip Guarino, part of the P2 Lodge. Now, bear in mind that the P2 Lodge, headed up by Licio Gelli, is headed up by a fellow who was an officer in the SS during World War II. And again, bear in mind that one of the major Third Reich plans for surviving defeat was to have the post-World War II Reich grouped around the SS and Gestapo. Bear in mind that, as we saw, also, we've taken a look at this in past segments of this archive show, an element of the mythology generated by Alfred Rosenberg's Ostministerium during the Third Reich was that Cossackia was a separate nation. We now find the Cossack GOP unit of the Republican Heritage Groups Council, despite the fact that there is not a Cossackia in the Soviet Union. Again, this representing an evolution of a Nazi political concept into a Republican Party unit. We took a look at Valerian Trifa in a big way in Radio Free America program number 2. This fellow was invited to give the opening convocation before the U.S. Senate in 1955 by Richard Nixon. And recall that we took a look at how he came in, that is to say, Valerian Trifa, an associate of Florian Galdau, how Valerian Trifa came to the United States as a result of his work for the Galen Organization. Again, Radio Free America number 2. We took a look at the P2 Lodge in Radio Free America shows 17 through 21, particularly numbers 17 and 19. Skipping down and continuing with Russ Belant's article, the Displaced Persons Commission, which worked from 1948 to 1952, arranged for approximately 400,000 persons to come to the U.S. Initially, it sought to bar members of pro-Nazi groups, but in 1950 a dramatic reversal took place. The commission declared, quote, the Baltic Legion not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. The Baltic Legion was also known as the Baltic Waffen or Armed SS. Now, again, this is declared, quote, not to be a movement hostile to the government of the United States, unquote. Famous last words. Continuing, the final report of the commission noted that the decision, quote, was the subject of considerable controversy, unquote, as well it should have been. The Waffen-SS participated in the liquidation of Jews in the Baltic region because the SS units were comprised of Hitler's loyal henchmen recruited from fascist political groups long tied to the German Nazi Party. Remember the Baltics, including Lithuania, we're going to come back to them later. Anyone opposed to the German occupation of the Baltic region, Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, was likely to meet a cruel death at their hands. They were now considered qualified to come to the United States to become American citizens. Further, pro-Nazi elements from other parts of Europe came to the U.S. through nominally private groups associated with the commission. In 1952, the commission completed its work. The Eisenhower-Nixon presidential campaign was on, and the Republicans were charging the Democrats with being, quote, soft on communism, unquote. Talk of, quote, liberating, unquote, Eastern Europe became part of the GOP message. That year, the Republican National Committee formed an ethnic division. Displaced fascists, hoping to be returned to power by an Eisenhower-Nixon, quote, liberation, unquote, policy, were among those who signed on. This would become the embryo for the formation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council in 1969. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. Last two sentences again, because they're critical. In a sense, however, the foundation of the Republican Heritage Groups Council lay in Hitler's networks in Eastern Europe before World War II. In many Eastern European countries, the German SS set up or funded political action organizations that helped form SS militias during the war. In Hungary, for example, the Arrow Cross was the Hungarian SS affiliate. In Romania, the Iron Guard. The Bulgarian Legion, the Organization of Ukrainian Nationalists, or OUN, the Latvian Legion, and the Belarusians, White Russians, Belarus Brigade, were all SS-linked.
That again from the AFA 37, September 6th of 1992. We're going to continue to examine the evolution of the OUNB and its links with the Republican Party in Side 2 of this program. However, we are all out of time. This concludes Side 1 of For the Record program number 778, the OUNB file, Part 2, being recorded on March 2nd of the year 2014. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.